Hey, everybody. The cartels. Who are they? Where do they come from? How is it possible they run the Mexican government? We have Jason Jones to discuss and how they monetize people on the southern border. An informative, important conversation. Listen closely and text this episode to your friends as we talk about the truth regarding the cartels. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to our podcast, open up your podcast application, and type in Charlie Kirk Show, that is Charlie Kirk Show, and get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com, that is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody, here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Joining us now is Jason Jones, Vice President of Border 911 and a cartel and border intel expert. Jason, welcome.
It's great to be with you.
We were having a spirited conversation about what's happening on the border. It is it's a crime against humanity. How bad is it? Talk just for the uninitiated listening in our audience. What's going on?
Been working that border since 1999. Never seen anything like it. If you look in the sheer volume and numbers of people crossing in the last 3 months, over 900,000 people, according to U.S. Customs and Border Protection.
Over what period of time?
Since 3 months. 3 months.
So that's 300,000 a month, and that's 10,000 a day ish.
Ish, yeah. We were averaging 12,000.
How many of the does that include gotaways, or is that just?
No, that doesn't include gotaways.
How many do we
1.
Think?
1.8 million under the Biden administration.
Gotaways since the beginning of his term.
That's correct, and those are just the ones we know of.
And so the gotaways are people that are now the interior of the United States. We have no idea who they are. They run, and what does Border Patrol not pursue them, or they just can't get hands on them, or they're distracted? They do a distraction type deal?
Oh, yeah, it's all by design. You know, and that's the story, though, Charlie, that's not told to the American people, because when you see most of the media, what do they show you? They show you these big groups crossing. But that's by design with the cartels, because they send those big groups, and then from there, that's where they open up to move fentanyl, deadly drugs, and the high values that have been crossing. And one of the things that's really important for the folks to understand is that in the old days, our border was a U.S.-Mexico, Central America problem. Today, the world is truly coming. I mean, we had people from 171 different countries last year.
There's a bunch of West Africans coming to Arizona. What's the story there?
I've been on your border for the last 7 days straight down in Lukeville trying to understand that. And according to Border Patrol, they started first seeing them about 6 months ago. And that directly linked to the Sinaloa cartel, specifically a individual by the name of Palone, who runs the Sonoita as the plaza boss down there. And the long-haul smugglers moving them in. But the problem you have here now in Arizona is that now they're moving that over towards Sassaby. They started seeing them 2 months ago there as well. I was just in Sassaby day before yesterday, and I can tell you, you know, Arizona, if you live here in this great state, get ready, because the fentanyl problem coming in is directly linked to that Sinaloa cartel, and that's why you're feeling it the way you are here.
And so much to cover. That does originate in China mostly, correct?
It used to. The chemical precursors do now. What's happened, though, is the Sinaloans hired chemists right out of universities all over Mexico.
Like and Walter White.
That's it. And they run their labs. And so the worst part of this, too, is now they've not only regular fentanyl, they've created parafentanyl, serafentanyl, and now mixing in xylazine. So when you hear the weaponization of fentanyl and wonder why so many Americans have died, you know, we lost 112,000 Americans to deadly drugs in 1 year. We have never been here in this nation's history. So I have to tell you, and I will say it again and again, that if this nation doesn't take on the cartels, if you think it's bad now, I know them very well. This is just the beginning.
Yeah, so help me understand, let's say the comprehension of the cartel culture is limited to Netflix, Narcos, for most people, myself included, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Those drug guys, those gangs, they call them.
Correct. Why is there such hesitancy to confront them? Are they embedded in American politics? Are they? Is there kind of a deal between them? Are we afraid of them? Should we be afraid of them?
We should definitely be afraid of them. And that's coming from somebody that built programs with the Texas Department of Public Safety and worked closely with U.S. intelligence agencies to crush them. I'm telling you that. And the reason I came public after retiring to designate the cartels as foreign terrorist organizations, I'm the guy that started that whole initiative.
Yeah, good for you.
Because I know them very well. And here's the real story that America needs to know about them, is that they're not drug gangs. They're not drug cartels. Drugs is something they do. Today, what has happened is that we went through a major shift with them, that we went from organized crime into an insurgency in Mexico, into terrorism, and now where we truly see them today as a parallel government. And I was working that, screaming at the U.S. intelligence agencies the entire time, saying we've got problems down here along the border as the Zetas, known as one of the most hyperviolent cartels in Mexico, really, Charlie, changed the game. That is now why they're so violent across the entire nation.
So help me understand, but what makes the cartels different than the Taliban or ISIS is I'm lacking to see an ideological component.
Right.
Is there?
There is.
So
there is.
What is that?
Well, in the last national election, a lot of people are not aware that CNN actually did one of the best workups on this. 132 politicians and staffers were killed in the last national election. It is not to control drug routes. It's to control power and have that power. And then they put their people who they want in charge. And that's why the country of Mexico is so corrupt.
Yes, they have two women running for the presidency. Are they captured by the cartels? Are they afraid of the, help me understand.
In Mexico?
Yes.
Yeah, you're not going to be the president of the country of Mexico unless you're sided with the cartels. We learned that under AMLO and look in his relationship with the Sinaloans.
So the cartels, are they at war still with each other? Do they play nice currently? Because, I mean, they're making out like bandits on this board.
They are winning right now.
Are they reaping the harvest and they'll fight later thing?
And literally, those are the discussions at the boss level that they are having in Mexico. Like, look, we're all making money. We have some and a great example that there's a lot of fighting going on in Mexico right now. But if you ever notice, it's the underlings fighting at the bottom. The thing to watch for the folks at home right now is when you see the bosses and the families start getting hit, that's when the real wars start. This stuff you're seeing right now down there along our border region.
So in some ways, it's almost the Godfather crime families that are experiencing a detente where they're saying, why would we fight? Let's continue our most profitable enterprise, which is the movement of drugs and people.
People right now along our southern border. But one of the things you got to think about with these cartels is that they're global. It's not a U.S.-Mexico problem anymore. Sinaloa cartel, we know, is in 54 nations.
Are they all Spanish-speaking nations?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, a great example of this is CJNG, the most violent cartel in Mexico, Cartel Jalisco New Generation. They're in 48 countries. And how did they get to power so quickly, so fast? They began moving their dope to Europe and Australia. So see, here's the problem. This is the story that hasn't been told by the Homeland Security Enterprise to the American people. How can we lose 112,000 Americans in a year, Charlie? How did we get here? There's not a terrorist organization in the world that has killed this many Americans. And yet we have still not even declared them terrorist organizations. And all of that really has to do with commerce
and trade with Mexico. Though? Why?
Trade. Commerce with Mexico, our partnership so close.
Cheap car, like Honda-made cars in Monterey or something?
I've been working this a long time. That's the real issue here.
So NAFTA in some ways subsidized the way to cartel hegemony.
I think what you just said is so true. How can you have global trade and not think for a second you're not going to have a global crime problem that comes with that? And that's exactly where we are.
So interesting to me. So I'm infinitely curious about the cartel because I know so little about it, right? Again, my understanding is Narcos plus Marty Bird and Walter White, like just kind of like how it's portrayed. And there is some sophisticated elements in at least how those motion pictures present the cartels, but I don't know next to anything more than that. So how do we defeat them? Is it possible?
It is. I can tell you that if we continue down the road of a law enforcement mission and not designate them and get new authorities to go after them. Just look at the capabilities. You know, they're leveraging everything from 40-millimeter grenades, hand grenades, 50-caliber belt-fed machine
guns.
These
are militaries.
That's exactly right. First, second, third, and fourth generation. I mean, we seized our first surface-to-air missile in Mexico from the Juarez cartel in 2016. I mean, this thing has spun rapidly out of control. And they get their training from terrorist organizations around the world like the FARC. I mean, this has been going on for a decade. So the thing that I have really had an issue with, Charlie, is why is the American people not been told by the Homeland Security Enterprise? So I went public, decided we're doing it ourselves, and enough's enough. We're going to get it fixed.
But we're told by Homeland Security that white supremacy is the greatest threat to the American homeland.
Can't make it up. You can't make it up. And yet we've got families in this country destroyed by fentanyl. Destroyed.
Yeah, entire cities.
You see the federal law enforcement enterprise completely out of focus as to what's really impacting the American people.
It's beyond a tragedy. What is the website that people can...
Border 911. You can find us there. And our whole goal there, we've united with Tom Holman, Mark Morgan, the best of the best in the business, Rodney Scott, Sarah Carter. And we're doing everything we can to illuminate what's happening out there.
Hi, I'm Adriana, a politics major at Hillsdale College. Here's Hillsdale President Dr. Larry Arnn with a Constitution Minute.
America's founders recognized an obvious fact of life. Human beings differ in terms of physical attributes and talents. Because of this, some people will be better at some things than they are at others. But they also recognized that the tall and the short among us, the swift and the slow among us, are still human beings if we are recognizable as human beings, and therefore we are equal in terms of the rights that pertain to human beings, rights attached to human nature, rights that come from God. The Declaration of Independence names three of the big ones: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Exercising these rights is necessary if we are to be truly free. In our own time, many influential people believe that only government can decide what our rights should be. This is dangerous. Understanding our rights and how the Constitution protects them is vital to our freedom.
To learn more and get a free pocket constitution, visit constitutionminute.com.
So Jason Jones is here. Can you riff on that? I said, are the cartels popular in Mexico? In certain areas, they kind of have a Robin Hood type approval.
They really do. Yeah. Sinaloa was a great example of that. You know, they've been around down there a long time. And look, you know, there's some hospitals that they've built down there to help the local populace. And look at Christmas as a great example. They'll go around handing out gifts. And then they film everything they're doing. They put it out as part of their propaganda. So the Robin Hood kind of effect is real. And they really try to propagandize that to gain favor.
And so they currently look at America as a cash cow. Can you explain how a human being is monetized by the cartel via the border? What is that process?
You're absolutely right. You know, this is something that Americans have not wrapped their mind around, that they can truly treat a person as a commodity. You know, I remember I was talking to a lieutenant within Cartel de Gafo, known as CDG, one of the oldest cartels down in South Texas. And I said, well, how do you know how much to charge for a young girl? And he said, well, what does she look like? Yeah. To determine how much money he can make. You know, I broke the story in February of 21 when CDG began putting wristbands on men, women, and children. This is the real story about what the cartels have become, because in the old days, it was about smuggling people into the country. They didn't care where you came from, Charlie. Today, it's about debt bondage, because that person is the gift that keeps giving. So when they cross, you know, in the old days, it'd be $100. Today, if you're a Mexican citizen in South Texas, it's $2,500 just across the river. Never mind how far they moved you. Central American, $3,000. If you're from China, $5,000. Russian or Middle Eastern, $9,000. Well, most of them don't have that money. So now they're indebted, yet they're here in our country.
You're saying that slavery still exists?
I'm not just saying it. I'm saying that America's new slave trade is here, and it is real.
And they're not all sex slaves. The women sometimes are, but they're remittance slaves.
That's right.
Via the Walmart currency counter, you're going to be sending 25% either back home or to the cartels, and it almost operates as an annuity to the cartels.
And how does it ever stop? Because from their standpoint, you're just going to pay until they decide you're not. This is the story that's not getting out.
So what the buried lead here is, but the cartels probably have a better idea of where these people are than our own government, because they want their money. So if all of a sudden, if Juan Hernandez stops paying, how do they find him?
They had the drug trade down in this country. What they didn't have was this human smuggling into the trafficking trade. And when the Biden administration opened up this border, they sent their operatives across into the country.
The interior.
That's right. They sent their operatives into the interior, and they rode buses that we shipped people all over the nation. And those people's job is every 2 weeks to a month, depending upon the alien smuggling organization they work with. That's how they get the money back. And here's the worst part. Every federal law enforcement agency knows it. Many of these people don't have critical skills, right? So what are they going to do? Well, they're going to get into the drug trade. They're going to get into the sex trade. And this is how, and this is why I've warned about public safety and the threats to this country based on what the Biden administration
Yeah, I mean, you
done.
Have to repay a debt. That's you're going to go right. steal a catalytic converter, or you're going to go break into a home.
That's exactly right.
You would rather go break into a home and steal a necklace than have the cartel cut your head off.
That's right.
Or they'll go after your family in Honduras.
There's the other part of it. So when you cross at the border, before they give you a wristband, where are you from? And they pick up your cell phone and they call your mom and dad. So now they've got you on the other end as well. They've got you on both. And the worst part of this is the Homeland Security Enterprise knows this, Charlie. Why are they not telling the American people?
You answer that question.
I mean, we all know, but it's horrible. It's horrible what's so taking place.
The volume of people is millions. So it's 10,000 a day. They're monetizing it anywhere between $2,500 to $10,000 a head.
On average.
So we're talking about a $30 to $50 million cash flow a day.
Just on people.
Just on people, not to mention the drugs.
That's right.
So $30 to $50 million a day. I mean, this is like a Fortune 100 company at this point.
And this is why you just saw what you saw in Ecuador. The strength and scope of them and what these cartels are becoming from Mexico, Central America, and South America. The American public should be briefed. There's a reason that we have been working as hard as we have to get these cartels designated, because look, they've taken over Mexico. Mexico, they truly are a parallel government. And Americans watched that happen. Do you remember when they arrested Ovidio Guzman? And what was AMLO, the president of Mexico, forced to do? To release him.
Yeah, of course.
Now, later we ended up catching him. But it was an example of truly the level and scope of how powerful they've
become. So this is the new slave trade in the Western Hemisphere. And we're told that it's a beautiful thing happening. How many girls are raped, would you say, in slave trades?
The real truth is we have no idea. Because
but it's significant enough where Americans would not put up with it if they found out.
If Americans knew what was really taking place and has been in Mexico, they would be stunned. And this is a real problem. They're going to find out now. It's too late. You see, you're going to hear a lot from these experts about national security. Okay, that's a great term to say. But we've opened the borders to the world. Now it is all about public safety and trying to stay left of boom and protect the American people now.
Jason, thank you. This was excellent. We'll have you on again.
It's great to be with you.
It's a very deep topic, and you approached it really well. Thank you. Hey, everyone. Charlie Kirk here. For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they are the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of this program, which is why I'm so proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech, religious liberty, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, our military veterans, and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. So keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation when you use offer code Charlie. Join me and make the switch today. That is patriotmobile.com/Charlie. That is patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Join me and make the switch today. That is patriotmobile.com/Charlie and free activation using offer code Charlie. Joining us now is Neil McCabe. Neil, welcome to the program. We have discussed January 6th quite a lot, and one of the gaps in the story is, why was the National Guard response so lackluster? Who was the one that didn't listen to Donald Trump, and why was there not greater protection? This is a key component here. We've speculated that it was Pelosi or Muriel Bowser, but you have a theory and a source for that theory. Please walk us through it.
It's one of those mysteries, right, Charlie? Like, what happened? Because nothing made sense, and people looked at it, and there were things we expected. We saw how the D.C. Guard responded to the George Floyd riots, responded to protect the White House. We've seen the National Guard respond to riots and civil disturbances and emergencies across the country. And so why did the Guard not show up until it was dark? And frankly, when I spoke to Colonel Earl Matthews, he told me when he arrived with General Walker, the commander of the D.C. Guard, the New Jersey State Troopers had arrived at the Capitol before the D.C. Guard. And the D.C. Guard Armory is 2 miles from the Capitol by design, because you want that response. The D.C. Guard does not have a governor because it's a direct report to the Pentagon. And so my source, Colonel Matthews, told me that it was Mark Milley, General Mark Milley, as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who stepped outside of his legal authority using his sort of the force of his personality and his relationship with the other general officers who over the years he had promoted and nurtured and sort of built this cadre around him, so that even though he had no legal authority and no role in the chain of command, these generals were listening to him. And he's the one who told the DC guard to back off. And in fact, at one point they were ordered not to cross North Street, which, as you know, here in DC, that's where the FBI building is.
So how far away was the National Guard on January 6th? Are you saying that they were just a couple blocks away?
Well, they were given orders not to cross 9th. But in fact, what Matthews told me is that, anticipating that there would be trouble at the Capitol, the riot gear and instructions were given to the DC guardsmen who are tasked with responding, so that they had all their gear and everything at their homes, so that when the call went out, they would report directly to the Capitol. So there was testimony in the official Army narrative that they were concerned that people would have to go to the armory and then come back to the Capitol, and that would be some kind of delay. That never happened. As soon as the call went out, the DC guard would have been ready to go. But there was a tremendous gap because, say, between 1 and 2 o'clock, the commanding general was calling the Pentagon for permission. That permission didn't come until past 5.
Yeah, this is really important. I mean, and New Jersey troopers made it to the Capitol before the guardsmen. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, and another thing, Charlie, is that, you know, in that insurrection, I don't want to really call it a trial, but whatever that proceeding was in Colorado, there was testimony saying that Trump was in effect an insurrectionist, but that testimony relied on the DOD Inspector General's report, and it relied on the official Army narrative, which Colonel Matthews says is flawed. So it's one thing to have a disagreement about what happened that day, January 6th, but now that false narrative is being extrapolated and metastasizing into having constitutional effects, where someone can be actually taken off the ballot based on a false narrative.
Yeah, I mean, this is incredibly important. So what do we have to do to get to the bottom and the truth of this? Or is it, unfortunately, do you think that they have sufficiently covered this up?
Well, it's like somebody once told me, they said, yeah, I hope we find out what happened to JFK before the last person who knows what happened died. You know, it's like I said that too many people are still alive, and that's why we don't know what happened to JFK. I think what we have to do is, let's propose that we have a Republican majority in the House, and they could have a committee, they could call it a J6 committee, and they could investigate what happened, and they could haul people in, and they could demand those documents that are sealed up at the National Archives, and they could actually find out once and for all what happened. Because the left is dominating this discussion of J6 because they are literally keeping the rest of us in the dark, Charlie.
Yeah, it's so important. There's aspects of this that I think will continue to come out. And so your reporting at redstate.com has been focused on this particular aspect. Are there other ones where you think that we have not received sufficient clarity regarding January 6th that we need to keep the pressure on, get certain answers from, or do you think we're close from getting the truth? For example, the pipe bombs.
Oh, the pipe bomb. Do we even know if the pipe bomb was real? Now, the pipe bomb, having the pipe bomb there and having the vice president, vice president-elect there, that's all wrapped up in this predicate that the Capitol became a restricted area, and that there was, and that the pipe bomb is shown as evidence that there was a terrorist threat. And this is being used to send all the grannies to jail, and people who are, you know, people who, if they were convicted, they'd spend 3 months in jail, but they're spending 2 years in pre-trial confinement. We have no idea what's going on. And it's so insane that 3 years later, that this thing would be such a huge mystery, especially when the Republicans control the House of Representatives. And you would think that the Republican leadership, or at least the staffers and the consultants and the people who are running that party, would know that it's being used against Republicans politically all over the country, and candidates and campaigns need to be able to respond. And we're completely in the dark.
Why has there been such slow drip from Speaker Johnson on the January 6th tapes? What is the latest on that?
I don't have a read on what's going on inside Johnson. My only just speculating as someone who's covered Capitol Hill, I think that he's inherited a lot of McCarthy's staff and McCarthy's fundraisers, and he basically allowed himself to be plugged into that infrastructure. And he has the idea that if I can ride out this cycle, then I can maybe I can reboot things later. But this is the same old trick leadership plays, you know, and that's why he concedes on the budget. You know, it's you talk to leadership staffers and they tell you, no, Neil, we just want to get this off the table and move on. And it's like they just conceding things because they don't want to fight. And this is what we're seeing with the budget. And Johnson is worried about his majority. But remember, Charlie, Nancy Pelosi had a 5-seat majority last session. And look at all the stuff she was able to do without a problem.
Why do you think that is? Should we be more like Pelosi?
It's like, listen, I can disagree with Pelosi and still respect her as a phenomenal political operative. So, you know, she ran that majority in such a way that you would, frankly, if you're familiar with how Cicero whipped votes in the Roman Senate, she did it the same way Cicero did. And he cut deals and he got to, you know, as Pelosi gets to 218, she gets to 220, she gets to 230. Once she's at 230, she then cuts loose all the votes she doesn't need. And she says, hey, I'm giving you a free pass on this one, but I'm going to need you next time. It's very simple. It's how it's done. We haven't had a Republican whip who's been able to figure that out since I don't know when, maybe since the 1920s.
So the diving deeper into that, I love that point you made, which I have not heard anyone make, which is Democrats had a 5-seat majority recently. And we started with, what, 3 or 4 seats, right? 3 or 4? I don't know, because we decided to shrink our majority because we're a bunch of morons, right? And so, and we get excuses. Oh, we can't do anything. Pelosi got stuff done. She rules with an iron fist. We kicked out Santos and all this nonsense. It was insane. So, is there something in the philosophy of conservatives that we struggle with the administration of power? Or is it that Pelosi is willing to play Machiavellian hardball and blackmail her members and threaten them? Is that the reason we can't govern?
I would suggest, Charlie, that conservatives don't have a problem governing, but there's been no tests because conservatives are not governing. It's like Republicans and conservatives are not the same thing, right? Conservatives have found a home in the Republican Party, but we're treated like the guests who stayed too long. And so we're not actually the ones making – Republicans, they love Washington. They want Washington to be in control. They want to get along with everybody. They want their kids to go to Georgetown Prep. They want their kids to go to Sidwell Friends. And, you know, they want their wife to get some lobbying job for the airlines and everything. They think Washington's great. And then conservatives show up and just spoil the party. And so, you know, if Johnson was let's find out if Johnson was going to run the speakership as a conservative, I'd love to see it. And I don't think it's ever been put to the test.
That is such a smart point. The philosophy that some Republicans have is they might be passively center right, but it is about lifestyle. You cannot underestimate this. Some people say, oh, you know, they're traitors. Some of them are awful people, but it's about the comfort, the lifestyle. They want to support a $500,000 to $600,000 a year lifestyle. And they want their wife, as you say, to be comfortable with Delta Airlines or with Pfizer or with AstraZeneca. And they find a home as controlled opposition. And then you have people like Matt Gaetz. You have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene or, God forbid, Donald Trump, and they come in and they represents the country. They hate that. Look, I recently read an article that said 84% of New Year's resolutions fail in the first 6 weeks. It got me thinking about PhD weight loss and nutrition and why it was a success for me. I haven't gained 1 pound of my 30-pound weight loss back. According to this article, most people blame their failure on lack of time, motivation, and loss of zeal. As I was reading, I can clearly see why I was successful on the program. It's because they make it simple. It doesn't take a lot of extra time. They're masters of motivation. You have a team of coaches by your side the whole time. and you don't lose your zeal because every week you make great strides, so you're excited about moving forward. Don't make getting healthy another New Year's resolution fail. This year, call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition. Make 2024 your year. Call 864-644-1900 to get started or online at myphdweightloss.com. I can speak from personal experience. These are excellent people. And go to myphdweightloss.com, founded by Dr. Ashley Lucas. Don't do this alone. That's number 864-644-1900, myphdweightloss.com. Call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition and make 2024 your year. That's 864-644-1900 at myphdweightloss.com. That is myphdweightloss.com. Don't do this alone. 864-644-1900. So the Iowa caucus is on Monday. How should we think about this primary? Has it been largely a distraction? Where do you stand on where things are proceeding in regards to this primary election?
I think it's very interesting that there's so much weight thrown into Iowa and so few Iowa winners actually go on to be president, let alone be the nominee. And I'm sure you've experienced this yourself, Charlie. The minute the votes are counted in Iowa, that circus can't leave Iowa fast enough to go to New Hampshire, and nobody thinks about Iowa again. I think that it's going to be very interesting to see how big a victory Trump runs up. Certainly, DeSantis put all his eggs in the Iowa basket. He moved his family. He moved what's left of his staff there. And of course, Jeff Rowe, who was running the Never Back Down pack, grew up very close to Iowa. He always presented himself as an Iowa expert. And so, you know, does DeSantis end his presidential run in Iowa? I think that's a very important question. It'll be interesting in New Hampshire how many Democrats are going to vote for Nikki Haley. And it's interesting, I didn't think about it until, you know, just as I'm talking to you, but when Biden and the Democrats moved their Democratic primary in New Hampshire to further on down the line, they basically meant that there's no Democratic contest at the same day as the Republican contest. So you have all these Democrats who have nothing to do. So, you know, they're going to be taking Democratic ballots. And how many of those Democrats taking Republican ballots are going to vote for Nikki Haley?
So what you're saying,
South Carolina.
This is important. What you're saying is that because the Democrats are the party of the oligarchy, not democracy or whatever. So they basically have this New Hampshire. Is Trump getting set up in New Hampshire?
I don't know. I hadn't even thought of it. I wish that but just as I'm talking to you, Charlie, you're making me think about these dynamics. And the fact that there's no Democratic contest at the same time as the Republican contest, you basically have all these free radical Democrats running around. And also remember, you know, a very strong part to why Democrats have had success in New Hampshire is that they bus in college students from Massachusetts. So I'll be interested to see, and they do the same day registration there. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how successful the Democrats are, what kind of effort they put in to busing in college students from Massachusetts to put Nikki Haley in a competitive spot with Trump. But certainly in South Carolina, which is the conservative firewall, Nikki Haley is going to lose her home state regardless of what happens in New Hampshire.
And the establishment and certainly the Democrats and the media, they have been begging for a primary. And it's been awfully sleepy.
Yeah.
What Iowa, do you think that there is any fear that Trump has been overplaying the polls and a win by 10 might be spun as a loss?
No, I think a win is a win. But frankly, it's not a lot of thought goes into Iowa. You've covered Iowa, Charlie. It's a lot of dark driving for hundreds of miles. The media hates it. The media loves New Hampshire because it's a quick drive from Boston, New York, or D.C. You just fly into Logan. You drive in 45 minutes. You're in Manchester. I would say that the first real where the media is invested is New Hampshire, and Trump is going to win New Hampshire. It may be close, especially with Christie pulling out, and certainly his taking the dive can't be ignored by the Trump team.
How can people find your content, Neil, and your writings?
Yeah, please look for me at redstate.com, and they can find me on Getter, X, and Truth at Reporter McCabe. Thank you very much, Charlie. Really appreciate being on with you.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.